Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. A few weeks ago, I was sitting in a coffee shop by the window, and I noticed something fascinating. That window unintentionally had become a mirror for everyone walking by. Person after person paused to check themselves out. Some with a quick glance, others with a full-on self-assessment. One woman, deep in a phone call, spent most of it staring at her reflection, unaware that I was watching her watch herself. It was a reminder of something we all know but don't always say out loud. We care a lot about how we look. And one feature that tends to hold our attention most is probably our hair. Whether we have a lot of it, none of it, or trying to figure out what to do with it, our hair tells a story. Today's guest knows that story inside and out. She's the founder of Strut Hair Solutions and Unveil Hair Care. Business is built around helping people feel confident, bold, and empowered one strand at a time. Alina Gibson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Alina is the founder of not one, but two companies, Strut Hair Solutions and Unveil Hair Care. Her mission is to create non-toxic, clean, sustainable, cruelty-free, and restorative hair products that promote a personal state of wellness, empowering everyone to feel confident in their appearance and show up as their best self. That's a noble endeavor.
Thank you.
Probably not an easy one either.
No.
So let's get rolling here.
Sure.
Pretty much everyone that comes in here always has some wonderful backstory on how did this come? And I know you got a personal story on how you got into this business. Maybe you could share that, get us kicked off.
Sure. It was right about 2000. My mom was struggling with really thinning, just mousy hair for her verbiage. And at the time, I owned an auto repair shop, and I remember going
so
with her.
So there's a story right there, right? We'll get back to that. Yes.
I went with her to some of the local wig shops, and I noticed that there was this disconnection between the empathy and seeing how my mom felt when she was in there. She had ordered like 7 wigs because she was in outside sales, and the lady had said, oh, they're on back order, no problem. And I just saw my mom's face just kind of drop, and the lady just didn't seem to get it of how important that was to her. And I thought, wow, if my mom feels this way, other people must. And then as I reflected on it, I remembered growing up in like the 80s and she's perming her hair and crimping her hair and all of these things. And it just was a constant struggle where she'd avoid photos or different things and would always talk about her hair. After that, and with the auto repair, I had a very small daughter at the time. She was 2 or 3 and the hours were 7 to 7 and it just wasn't conducive to being a single mom and raising her. So I started with a kiosk in the mall, in our local Fresno mall, just to see if I could do it. And I fell in love with it. You know, a year and a half later, one of my employees saw an inline store and I left the mall, did that because people would ask for wigs and different things. And I got really good at it. And then about 5 years in, I went to beauty school and got my hair license because that was one of the really big things when we had the auto repair was I wasn't a mechanic. Mm-hmm. So if you caught me away from the computer and asked me questions, I didn't necessarily know them, though we were able to do all the sales, fill up the bays, because that's what I do. I'm sales and marketing. So I was able to get that, but not know actually what we were doing. So once I stayed with the hair, I decided I need to know everything that there possibly is.
Expertise going here. Yeah.
Yes. But I did do it for 5 years without that and just built it up and then opened another store and then created the hairline and the rest is history.
It's rolling from there.
Rolling from there.
All right. So how the heck did you get into the auto repair business? I mean, that's not the norm for girls.
Right. Well, I
don't want to be creating any stereotypes here, but just not the norm.
Not the norm, especially when you're like 23. I worked at a gas station when I was in...
Pumping gas?
No, but I was at the register during high school.
Okay.
And the one that I worked at had a bay on it. My mom was really close with the guy that owned it. That's how I got the job. we had an auto repair on the side. And so I paid attention to, you know, Napa, Kragen, all the different guys that would come in ordering the parts, how much it cost, how long it took. And so then when I had my daughter at 20, I worked at Macy's and that wasn't working, trying to manage her and their crazy hours. I remember quitting and sitting there thinking, what can I do? What do I know how to do that I can bring her with me? Because I couldn't afford babysitting. Auto repair came up. I found in the paper this space that had a couple bays that was for lease. And then I got the compressors and I opened the accounts with all the different auto dealerships, Sebring West and all of them. And, you know, the rest is history.
So you just kind of worked your way through this thing, kind of unpacking it one step at a time.
That's kind of how you do it, right? You just figure it out. And then we got a couple mechanics and they were always playing solitaire. I remember walking out there and on the computer. And then we sponsored like the Fresno Falcons and stuff. We were on the back of their pocket schedule. So again, the marketing, right? Home of the $13.95 lube oil and filter. And then I created this 21 checkpoint list. Because if you check 21 things on any car, there's always something wrong.
There you go.
But it was a very skeptical business.
People, like, I'm going to the doctor tomorrow. I'm sure they're going to find something wrong when they look under the hood here.
They always do, right?
21 checkpoint here. Yeah.
It was clever. I mean, I was really good at that part. And so the bummer was, though, is people are always, they don't understand that there really is something wrong. It's like a dentist. They're always thinking you're out to get them. And I really didn't like that feeling. And when I started Strut, what was so amazing is people were so happy for the service that I gave them. They felt so bad about themselves and their hair and their self-esteem that when I gave them the gift of hair, they were just so appreciative. So it was such a different dynamic that I think that's why I've been in it for 24 years is because it feels so good to make other people feel that good.
Yeah. Well, that's like really interesting concept you just said there. It was like this whole kind of the, oh, wow factor, right?
Yes.
I came in feeling like this, looking like this, and all of a sudden I have this whole different feeling about myself. That's going to be wonderful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can sell that.
That's where we came up with our tagline is walk in and strut out.
Got it. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just like my little opening thing, right? We are very concerned about what we look like.
Yeah. Well, you know, your hair, especially for a woman, is part of your identity. Every time you look in the mirror and you see yourself, that's kind of like the frame. If someone is going through hair loss, they don't see themselves as they usually do. And then also for a woman, it's part of our femininity and it's what makes us feel beautiful. So then when you take that away without choice, then your self-confidence goes down. You know, don't want to show up to things. It's almost like kind of having a pimple, right? You shy away from all these things and hair loss is very similar to that. And even for men, you guys had Bruce Willis and all these guys that shaved their heads, but deep down, you still want your hair. You know, if you had the choice, you would do that.
Right. You'd have some big wavy McConaughey or whatever.
Kind yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Because hair is very youthful. It's very like for women, it's, you know, part of fertility and all of those things because clear skin, all of that, all goes to that youthfulness. So I call it like an instant facelift.
So how do you manage that? How do you make it so I can strut out? But what's the process?
Well, in the stores, the process is we have laser hair therapy. So we have a lot of men that do that. So it actually helps to regenerate your hair follicles through Heaney waves, nano waves, and it scientifically actually really does work. There was a doctor in Hungary that found he was doing like scar therapy. And when they put the laser light, the hair actually grew. And so that's kind of how that started almost 20 years ago. And now you see it online where people are doing it on their face and all these different places to help, you know, regenerate the cells. And then the other thing we have is Unveil, which is the product I created during COVID. And a lot of that was even for myself because as I got into my 40s, my hair is thick and full, but stopped growing and started breaking. So I was like, okay, what can I do that's here? Something that's clean, that we're using stem cells because my mom had a bone spur. And I remember they did stem cells and it
Your mom's like a guinea pig for all your projects. Huh?
Oh my gosh. She's amazing.
That's what we're doing, working on now, mom.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She's always right behind me, just pushing.
What's your ailment, mom? We're going to fix that. We're going to go sell it to everybody else. I love it.
Well, she uses Unveil and she wears the wig. And what's so funny is she'll say her hair now is thicker than it was 5-6 years ago, when in theory it should be thinner.
And the other way, yeah.
So she's always testing my stuff. She's awesome. Even when I got the laser before we had a client under there, she sat there so we could see how it worked. And
yeah. Are these products that you helped develop, or are these things that you found to bring to the party, or how, what does that look like?
Sure. I actually developed them. So I hired a lab out of Phoenix. I actually went through two different labs before the third one that I came up with. And I had just a list of ingredients, you know, like I knew I wanted the plant stem cells. I wanted it to be clean. We wanted,
so just based on research that you have done.
Yeah. Okay. And I had sold all these other products for say 19 years, right? So Revitagen, Viviscal, all these other competitors. And then the clients would come in and, you know, give comments on this one just stained my hair, or I can't take that. It has shellfish in it, or whatever. So I had just kept track of all of that kind of stuff randomly. And then when the lockdown came and we all had time, instead of reorganizing my closet, I made out a list of, you know, how can I create my own hair care product? And it was something that could be done in the US. And so this chemist in this lab, Chris, we worked in, probably it took almost a year to get it out, because every time she'd send me a new batch, I had to use it for 90 days to 100 days.
Sure, nothing bad happened. And
well, a hair growth cycle is okay. 90 to 100 days.
Okay.
So that way I could see those new hair growths, the vellus hairs coming up. And then I knew, okay, that works. And so then we finally landed on one. So it took probably 3 or 4 iterations, the way it felt in my hair. And then I, at that time, I had an African-American girl working in my Fresno store, and I wanted her to use it. That way it was inclusive for all hair types. So she'd spray it, because a lot of times when you have kinky, curly hair, you don't want to get it wet. So we actually did put alcohol in it so that it evaporated after it sunk in the part that needed to get in, so that you could still put it in dry hair and then style your hair and go on with your day, where most hair growth products are oils. Well, I don't want to put an oil in my hair. I only wash my hair, you know, a couple times a week, and then it'll look greasy and dirty. So this was a great way. So I had test subjects with the stores every day. Somebody, I'm spraying, what do you think of this smell? And how does that feel in your hair? So it was really great.
You're very hands-on. Let's just do it right here, real time.
Yeah, exactly.
So that had to be quite the little experience, though, of going through the kind of the science project of coming over the product that works. And then you got to do the manufacturing, the labeling, and everything else. So what did that look like for you?
That was a nightmare. And the labels did not come out good. When they came out, I called the lab and I was like, you guys don't understand retail readiness, do you? It was like kind of hard to read, and they charge for everything. So to send the sticker to me, it was like $200. So they sent me the photo. I'm like, well, that looks okay. And then I got 5,000 units. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's terrible. So you learn, right? And then the straw inside where it pumps was a little too long. So a couple of them bubbled over. Then they had to take the pallet back, snip those, bring, send them back to me. So there was a lot of a learning curve.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not.
So you kind of think that these guys would have that nailed, right? That this is what they do, and they would know how long things should be and all that. But what a frustration, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to go through the learning cycle with them on these things.
Well, and I have a couple friends that are in, you know, product development and stuff. And I've learned from them that this is very normal, where you're, you know, slinging pallets back and forth. And when you're talking 5,000 units, that's not cheap, because it comes in on a pallet and drops down. So.
And there it is.
There it is.
If it's not good, oh, there it is.
Now there it is.
Now I got a garage full of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And they make you buy so many. So it's like you're trying to negotiate as low as you can. And 5,000 is a very small amount. I mean, if you can't sell 5,000, you really don't have a product. So, I mean, they're, to even be somewhat big time, you're at 50,000 units. Well, you got one thing wrong on there. That's a lot to have to fix. So that's where you start getting those price breaks and stuff, is as you get into those higher numbers.
Yep. Yep. Make it up on volume.
Yep.
So what was the biggest learning out of all of that? I mean, if someone's thinking about going down that process of going out and developing a product and all that, what would you say? Either A, don't do that, or B, think about these three things, or don't do that, or...
Well, I would never encourage somebody to not do something, especially if it's their dream and that it's very important to them and they have something of value to bring to the market. Like for myself, seeing all of the things that were out there and they were missing things, in my opinion. And then here we came to fill that void. Definitely having the money. If you run out of money, that's a really big thing. Owning your IP. Like I negotiated that in the very beginning. So when I knew we blew up, they didn't try to hold me hostage and charge me more later for that intellectual property, getting all your trademarks. You know, there's so many steps you have to do, getting the right trademark attorney. And I'm constantly fighting with, you know, the government on that. They've always got those assessors and they're sending back, this is wrong and that's wrong. And then somebody's, I've got Louis Vuitton at me now for one of my trademarks for Unveil. They said that the lettering looks too close to theirs. And I'm like, really? It's a U and a V. There's no LV, you know? And so, yeah, there's always somebody after you, which I guess is a good thing. I told my attorney, I said, that must be fun to talk to Louis Vuitton's attorneys, you know? I mean, wow.
In terms of they got lots and lots of money and lots of attorneys, and here you are, right? Just trying to make something happen. So that's a big challenge.
That's a big challenge. And when it's all done, I'll definitely be sending an email to them. I won't be purchasing their products. It's like, we're so little, really. But for them, that's what they do, is they have these AI that searches.
Right. They got an army sitting there.
They have an army. So, you know, it's no big deal to send a letter to me. Then I have to pay for the attorney and all that to receive, have to respond. Now we have to change our logo and all of these things, which is going to cost. So really, if you're going to go down that route, make sure you have the money to fund it or some kind of backup while you're getting all this going, because I'm 2 years in and still, you know, battling with different things. And right. That's what a waste of money.
It's also back to having some great people around you. Like you're talking about the attorney that's helping you with the trademarks, those kinds of things. Like yes. I decided on trademark jailbreak leadership.
Yes.
And how hard could it be?
Yes.
And of course, I fill it all out and the government says no. Then I got myself an attorney and now I have it, right? So
yes.
Should have just done that to start out with. But
I do that. I file first because it's like $250. Why spend $800 for them to fill it out? But when I get the letter back, which you almost always do.
Guaranteed, right?
Guaranteed. Then I hire him because now it's an hourly rate versus the flat rate to go ahead and take care of all of that stuff.
So the big thing is always, can you out and sell? And like you're just saying, I know how to do that, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's always foundational. I mean, yes. So many people have a good product or have a good idea, but if you can't go out and sell it, then you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
So what's the tricks and tips to that? How do you make that happen?
The sales, relationships, being here, meeting new people. It's always, I think that's been huge and having big supporters there. I'm more of a guerrilla marketer type of person. And I guess, you know, I don't mind going out and, you know, banging on doors. Like when I came here and started Strut, I went to all the oncology, hematology, different places, plastic surgeons, and took my wares and introduced myself and let them know I was here. That's a very inexpensive way, just to tank a gas and time to go meet people. And then you get that right person that then know someone else, that's where you kind of get that scale, which is what I'm working with Unveil. I have a couple salons here, health centers that carry Unveil, which is not going to do much. However, if it gets in the right hands at one of those places, then they can help you to, you know, get those bigger numbers.
Are you mostly local here in San Diego, or do you start to have a larger reach, or where's your products going?
Most of my ads, the products are on the East Coast, actually.
Oh, okay.
So from our Google ads.
So what led to that? Just...
That's who's clicking on the ads.
Okay.
The sales that we make here are really through the store. And I was meeting with one of my mentors last week, and he was really thrilled to keep at me to building Strut out more, to sell the products through there and use that as the launch pad to sell the business. Cause that's what Unveil was built for, was to sell, where Strut was built to take care of my daughter. That's why I've had it so long. So she's 27 now.
Okay.
She's gone through college.
<story. laughs> Yeah,
right?
She back working for you now, or what's happening there?
No, I think that entrepreneur roller coaster was not for her. She is a corporate woman. She works for the Humane Society.
Okay. Saw you and said, okay, thanks, mom. I'm not going to do that.
No, thanks. She's like, you just keep going with that. Yeah, no. But I did it her whole life. So I feel like she paid her dues there, right? So it's just never been her thing. I thought we could take over the hair world together, and it's just not her dream. And that's,
well,
okay.
You might be surprised. She may come back. You know, X amount of time in the corporate world, often you go, wait a minute. But also, if the seed of entrepreneurialism is in there, I think it's, you know, friends of mine growing up, their dads were entrepreneurs or ran a business. They tended to run businesses.
Yes.
My dad worked for GM. Guess what? I became a corporate guy for the first 20 years of my life, right? I think those seeds get set. So who knows? She might come back.
Well, my mom set those seeds. You know, she used to do the network marketing. So I grew up with that. I mean, she sold Avon, and I remember vacuuming the Avon Center when I was like 8 and watching her go door to door and sign people up to sell Avon. And then she did Beauty Control, and then she did Tupperware and Pampered Chef. And I mean, you name it, my mom sold it. Mary Kay, Jaffra.
Yeah, so
I know them all.
Now look at you, right? Now you're the chief sales officer here for your
business.
You gotta love that.
I learned all of it from her. Yes. Yeah, perfect. Watching, going up through all of that and the personal development that comes with that, right? I mean, she took me at 18 to the Cow Palace to see Colin Powell, Bill Clinton. I think Zig Ziglar was there. Like, I mean, I learned all those sales things, not even realizing it, just trucking along behind her.
Took us a little while for you and I to get together to do this podcast because you were opening up a new location and all that. So maybe talk about that a little bit from a leadership perspective and what you've learned about, you know, building out stores and hiring people?
Yes, I opened another location. I was in my previous one for 14 years, and I was trying to work with the landlord to get more space to add these new services, because this past year I got my trichology certification and my board certification as a drugless practitioner. So now I can do tinctures and teas and all of these different things to help heal the body, which then will help with the hair growth, et cetera. So I was telling him that I needed more space, and two spots opened, and he said to me, "I don't think you need more space." And I said, "Well, okay." And then I was driving down Birmingham, which is one of our local streets, and I saw this space for lease, and come to find out the leasing agent had been my client, because they were just
full circle
because they were way too high on the rent. I had actually previously called the November before, and when they gave the rent, I was like, "Oh no, I just can't do that." I called back and she's like, "No, please come in, come see it. Let's do something. The landlord will be negotiable." So I went down there and looked at it. Funny enough, my mom was visiting from Arkansas and she saw the space, and I'm like, "No, this is never going to work. There's too many walls." And she said, "Oh no, we can get rid of all of these." And she's just walking around saying, "Get rid of this and get rid of that." And she was right. And the rest is history. We were able to work it out. And yeah, so I left. And then it was funny too, because the landlord came in the other day, the previous landlord, as I'm moving out, and he says, "I just can't believe you're leaving. We're just going to miss you. This is just so terrible." And I'm looking at him and I'm like, "I asked you like 50, like the day before I signed that other lease, I'm like, are you going to give me that space or not?" "Nope."
So he's completely, "I don't know why you're leaving." Yeah.
Looking at me like starstruck, like, "I just can't believe you're going." And I'm like, "I gave you every opportunity." And that's the second time that's happened to me. That happened to me in Fresno, negotiating when that lease had come up, and I had just moved to San Diego, and they had said, "Oh, we think we can get a better tenant, like an A+ tenant," which I didn't know what that meant at the time. So when you have these buildings that you own, you want Starbucks, 7-Eleven, you want that name. Because my thought was, is if I pay my rent every month, why do you care what name is on it? Well, apparently there's a big deal to it.
Right, it's like an anchor. It's supposed to draw people in from other, come and get your Starbucks and get things at the other stores, I guess.
For sale. It looks better when you're trying to sell it. Yeah. I guess you get a higher multiple.
True, yeah.
So they offended me. So I went ahead and said, "Well, then I'm going to move." And they said, "Well, we think you'll close it. We don't believe that you'll move." And 4 months later, I moved to that store.
Yeah, I'm always kind of amazed. I see, you know, I read about restaurants that seem to be doing really well. I was actually at a breakfast place in La Jolla, and a friend of mine said, "Let's meet here." And I said, "Oh, I've eaten here before." He said, no, but there's one up in Carmel Valley, whatever. He goes, "But that one closed." And so we're having breakfast. And he asked the waitress, you know, "What happened to the store?" And he said, "Oh, it was the rent." Mm-hmm. They just raised the rent so high that we couldn't afford to operate. And the place was packed.
Yeah.
And my friend said that place was always packed.
Yeah.
So now you probably go up there, I'm probably sitting there, it's probably sitting there empty. I just never quite figure that out, right? There was always like, "Oh, we're in charge. And then finally you leave. And it's like, "Oh, now what are we going to do?"
Now what are you going to do? Well, in that place in Fresno on Shaw, they never got their A+ tenant. It's like a dress store now, like quinceañera dresses and stuff. And they had many months that it was empty, that I would have just still been there, you know, not bothering anybody.
How big is your team? How many folks you got working with you?
So each store usually has 4 people. Okay. So we have 2 sales, 1 front desk, and 1 that helps with the washing and styling in the back. And then I have social media team. And then sometimes I have a personal assistant or not. It just depends on what's going on in my life.
Isn't it great when you have one though? Yes. When it works great.
When it works great, yes. When it doesn't, no.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
So usually around 12.
Okay. So what's been the learnings around that, building your team out? That's so important.
Yes. I think I spent the first 15 to 20 years mastering my sales. I mean, sales is just nothing to me now. But the leadership and all of that is what I've really been honing in the last 5 years on, because with AI and all of this stuff, that's going to be really what makes the difference, especially during COVID. I think that really hit me, having everybody with different opinions on how that worked, managing all those different feelings around it versus my feelings on it. And all my staff came back. So when we closed in March, when we came back in June, everyone was back. Everybody was happy, but we all definitely had different, you know, opinions on how
different crowd of people, right?
Different crowd of people. And then with the customers, how that worked and some different things that we put into play after that, which was really good. Like now we're by appointment, which we had never been before, but I noticed that the guests had a much better experience. We were able to do more one-on-one. Our ticket sales went up versus seeing more people. we see less, but they're actually happier. So we have a process now. So when someone walks in, we say, you know, welcome. Have you been in before? No, we haven't. Great. Well, we have a process to exceed your expectations. And we just go boom, 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 boom. And I did all that during COVID, which has been huge.
You got some SOPs.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
That's the key to success, right?
That SOPs. That is the key. Well, and running a store in Fresno. So as I said, I moved to San Diego, right? So 2011, when I went to that first center, and then I've ran that store, which is 6 hours away if you drive, remotely all this time. And it was by building out all my systems before I left, which while I was in beauty school, I actually did, because I went to school while I was running that store. And then my staff would pick my daughter up from junior high, take her to the store while I sat in school. And then when the store was about to close, I'd leave and go to the store, pick her up and go home. And that's kind of how that circle worked. And so while I was there, I was learning how to run the store, but not be there. So when I graduated and came out, it was like, well, you guys don't need me. And then that's when I decided to expand and open another store. And then I wanted to go far enough away to test my system. So if I wanted to sell you a business, you couldn't say, well, Helena, it's because you're in there. It's because of what you do. I'm not there.
That is so critical.
That is so critical that your business can run without you, just in case. What if you got hit by a bus and you needed to be out for, you know, a couple months, that you have all of that there, or when you want to sell?
Yeah. I mean, that is a failure. Probably most small businesses, it's all wrapped around the owner.
Yes.
And just never get to that place that they can be step away and let it run by itself. And
yes.
And to your point, often sometimes it runs better, you know, when you do step away,
yes.
Empower your folks to go do it. So again, back to how do you hire really great people that you can trust and can do a good job and really care about, you know, the business and what you're trying to do there.
Yeah. Well, I got accepted into a program at MIT. I'm on my second year, and that was our whole first year, was just reading all of these things and doing all of this about, you know, like the bigger your dream, the more important your team. I can't do it all by myself. There's only so many hours in the day. And back in the day, I could outwork you with AI and all of these things. It's almost impossible. So it is important. And that culture, like on Saturday when we were moving stuff, the girls, they all went out. Now I wasn't able to go. They were like, come on, Helena, go. And I'm like, no, I got to finish, you know, doing all this stuff. But it was nice to see that they had their cars in the driveway and they went out, you know, they sent me photos and stuff. And it's like, that's good, because you want that. You want them to have that bond together, because we spend more time with the people that we work with than we do our families most of the time.
Which one of the things, I mean, it's part of the core of this work that I do here, is the whole idea of like, how do you make work meaningful? Mm-hmm. Because statistically, according to Gallup or whatever, something like 70%+ of people do not find meaning in work.
Yes.
Well, if you can enroll people in what you're doing and they start to find meaning in this, it's just such a big win for everybody, right? You feel great about them enjoying the work, and you know what you get back from them is just 10 times anything you could ever imagine. So I don't know why companies don't do a better job and pay more attention to like, how do we enroll our folks? How do we really create an opportunity and a culture for folks that, you know, just love to work here?
Well, I'm lucky because what we do makes a difference. So most,
that is a nice starting point.
Yeah. Versus the auto repair, right? That's very transactional, where this is a very emotional. So I have to be very careful who I hire, which is a problem when I have to hire sometimes, because it's not like Baskin Robbins where you can just hire anybody and you're scooping ice cream. This is someone that's going through the most difficult time of their life potentially. So whoever I have on my team has to have that empathy. As I said, I saw that disconnect with my mom. And have a way to bring the client on that journey with our strut process. That's what we call, you know, we have the strut way. That's what our handbook's called, you know, and then I just do these different, you know, Helena's expectations. And then it says, what would Helena do? You know, so they know in their mind, what, how would I do that? But as far as enrolling them, I have a step up with that, because the business in itself enrolls them. But then it's beyond that then of the environment that I keep. So when the first page of our handbook goes over our values, what we're trying to create, and then it says, and make it fun. Make it fun for the client, because they're going through all these doctor's offices and appointments and, you know, they don't feel good. So when they come to us, we try to do everything we can to make it as much as like being at a hair salon. And I think my age has always served me there, being younger, so that that way it doesn't feel stuffy. And it's like, you know, you can still wear this when you go on a cruise or when you do something else. And yeah, so we try to make it a good something, a good experience for them. And then that's what's so amazing, is I'll see them at Target or when I'm out and they're like, you just made that so easy. And I just didn't know what to expect, because you'll watch them sit in their car and I'll be at the cash wrap. I see them in there and I tell the team, do you know what it took for that woman or man to come across that threshold? Because what they're doing is they're acknowledging there's a problem, or that something's going to happen, their hair's going to come out. That's not easy to do. So once they walk through that door, you better create that experience, because online there's so many competitors now, but they can't do that what we do. They can't create that feeling, that environment, which is another reason I wanted to move and was trying to move into that new space, was to update our environment and to make it feel that good. Because after COVID, people are yearning for that sense of community and so forth. And I'm so happy to be in Cardiff, because it's such a, which I'm surprised with Solana Beach was such a small community, but this one just seems so much tighter and there's so many more walkers and they're all curious and popping their head in. And I love it. It's really great to be a part of Encinitas and that community.
So how do you hire? How do you sort through that and figure out who the right people are?
Well, I use Indeed and ZipRecruiter. And then I look for certain past jobs, like if they've worked at Ulta, if they've worked at other salons. They don't necessarily have to be a hairdresser to start, though most of my team is, that they have that sales background, because bottom line is sales. We're selling hair. And then I use Culture Index. So that's one of those personality tests where we can see the type of personality they have. Like my daughter is so funny. She's like a 10 on patience, where I think I was like a 1, you know, and it shows like with her and her job where she really does fit so well, because she doesn't have the same profile as I do when you do those. And you can see the different, the craftsman or the daredevil, trailblazer, all these different things. And I can see where they'll fit in. And are they better at the front desk? Are they a better salesperson? You know, so I'm not that.
I'm not familiar with that tool. So it sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. Culture Index. It's awesome.
So then you decide what of these culture features that you think you need for your business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Then looking for people who are high on that. And then you hire those folks and was I right or was I wrong, right?
Yeah.
What do I need here?
Yeah. And I kind of date them. So I learned that a long time ago where, you know, when they come in for the first interview, usually with my team. Then they come in and they do an in-person interview. And what I mean by that is that they like kind of shadow and watch what we're doing, because most people have never been in a wig shop unless they've needed it. So they don't know what to expect. The emotional charge of our clients. Like I always say, when somebody walks into a hair salon, like yourself, you're so excited to get your hair cut. You take your wife on a date. Your hair's looking fly. It's awesome. You want to be there. Well, when they walk in mine, they don't want to be there. As I mentioned, my hair is going to fall out. I don't know what to expect.
A little bit of the doctor's office sort of feeling, right?
Exactly. So they have to understand that difference of this client doesn't want to be here, where most of your jobs, they do want to be there, you know, to buy a lipstick or whatever. So it's really trying to do that. Then I walk them to their car, because I always like to see how somebody takes care of their car, because that pretty much tells me how they're going to take care of my store. Is it clean?
Okay, now that's key. That was excellent right there. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. When you're driving, what's it look like? Doesn't have to be new, but is it clean or is it full of junk?
Yeah. So
that's a great tip. That's a really good tip.
And it's true. Let me tell you, don't slide on that.
Yeah.
Because you like them, because that is how they'll take care of your stuff. Because how somebody does one thing is really actually how they do everything. You can kind of fake it. Like, that's why I like to see them four times.
You can fake a lot of things in an interview. Yep.
Yep. So we do a 90-day probation. It's California. So we date.
Yep.
Then I marry them.
Because once you're married, it's tough to like break up, right?
Oh my goodness. Even though it's at will, it's really not. But I have to say, most of my staff has been with me anywhere from 4 to 7 years. And when they hit that 7-year mark, that's usually because they've moved, they've went on to real estate or something else. Everybody pretty much stays. I try to create an environment of what I would want to be in. And since I have to hang out with them, you know, I make sure that we all kind of mesh. And that's another thing that I do is the last step with the new team member is they hang out with my current team members to make sure everybody gets along. And I put that in my job ad. Vibes are very important to us. You have to have a strong work ethic, but you also have to like to have fun too when you're here. And so then everybody collectively says, hey, Helena, I really like that one. Or, that one gave me a weird feeling. And if one of them says no, they're the ones that work with them more than I do. So I'm like, I'm sorry, it didn't work out, but thank you so much.
Do they interview together with the person? Yeah, that's a good way of doing it.
Yes. Yeah. The whole team gets to interview them.
Yeah. But not one-on-one.
No.
As a team. Yeah.
No, as a team. Because then that would be very... That would probably make them self-conscious, the candidate.
I'm a big fan of more than one person in the room interviewing anyways, because people typically do a lousy job of interviewing on both sides of the equation.
Yes.
And so here I'm supposed to be interviewing you for a job, and I'm so worried about the next question I'm going to ask you or whatever. I'm not really even paying attention to what you're saying often, right?
Yeah.
So if you got two people there, or like I noticed something and then afterwards we're talking about it, I go, remember when Helena did the whatever? Oh, yeah. Well, I thought that was really weird. Yeah, now you mention it, where you might, you know, if you're the stress of trying to do it one-on-one, just sometimes you miss a lot of things, is what I discovered.
Well, it kind of
validates things when you can both talk about it afterwards. Had the same experience.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because they'll see things I don't. And when they do that team interview, I'm not there. Perfect. I make sure that I'm not there.
Yeah, perfect.
Because then my team will be honest. And I tell the candidate, ask them, what's it like to work for me? How long have you been here? Do you see yourself staying? Like, all, you know, what kind of advancement is there? So that whatever I told them in that first talk, it's validated for them. So that candidate wants to come to work for me.
Yeah. And they're seeing who they're going to be working with.
Right.
Right. It's like one thing working for you, but who are these people that I'm going to have to be working with then day in and day out? So
yes.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is. That's been very helpful.
Great tips. Great tips.
Good.
Believe it or not, we're kind of coming to the end of this here. So what's the big idea? If there was one thought out of this whole conversation we had here today, what's like the one thing you'd like people to remember?
Probably resourcefulness, that whatever obstacle in front of you, there is a solution. And I got that from Tony Robbins. Like, he always talks about modeling people that are those few steps ahead and where you're trying to go. And having been an entrepreneur since I was in my early 20s, I've never worked for a corporation. I wasn't that person that got to work somewhere and then go and copy, or had all that time of a manager to feed me all these things and then go take off and start my own business. I started and had to learn it all on my own. So that made me super resourceful. I think that's one of my superpowers, is that whatever it is, I'll figure it out. And then just like you asked me about, if they want to do manufacturing, would you say no? Whatever it is you want to do, you can do it. You know, I've had every reason for it to not work. Like I said, being a single mom, starting in Fresno, I didn't have a bunch of money. I mean, when I started Strut, I went to Home Depot and bought the plywood and then painted it. And then my mom had found some displays out behind JCPenney's of the time and called my dad, and he brought the truck and picked them out by the dumpster. And I put those in the store and we fixed them up. I mean, I started with just cash, and you just start small and then you grow. You don't just run in and have hundreds of thousands of dollars to do something.
Doesn't work that way.
Not in my world.
Most people's world.
Yeah. You know, but I was determined to take care of my kid, and I knew I needed to make this work. And I feel like sometimes if your back's up against the wall, like, failure just wasn't an option for me. I couldn't fail. There was nothing else. So I feel like when people have that, then it just makes you scrappy and hungry. Like Les Brown would say, you got to be hungry, you know, and I ate way too many cup of noodles. So we were hungry. And then the rest is history.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. And here we are today.
And here we are today. Still eating cup of noodles sometimes.
Because they're good.
Because they're good.
Not because I have to.
Not because I have to.
Makes them taste different. Makes them taste way better, for sure.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Geez.
Now you're reminiscing. Oh yeah. Boy, I'm kind of eating Jonesing for some cup of noodles right now.
Well, the guy that I'm dating now is so funny. He had come over and it was time to eat or have a snack or something. And I went in there and I literally made top ramen. And I remember serving it to him. And he says, is that top ramen? I said, yes, it is. I mean, that's where I come from. Like, this is what I do, you know? And we sat there at like 11 o'clock at night and ate it. And it was like the funnest time ever. And he still brings it up. So
I love top ramen. I take half the noodles out and I fill it up with Ritz crackers. That's my...
Oh, I'll have to try that.
That's the way I go.
Okay. Okay. I love it.
When I get sick, that's what I want.
Yes.
My wife goes, really? That's what you want? I go, yeah. And a box of Ritz crackers.
I love it.
Well, Helena, thank you so much for coming in. You're doing some wonderful work here. Really important work as well.
Thank you.
How people think about themselves, that is so important.
And
the idea that people are coming into you is like, not that they're because they want to be. They got an issue and you're changing their lives. So keep up the great work. Love it.
Thank you.
And you're such an entrepreneur. I love that resourcefulness. That's you.
Thank you.
From auto repair to hair.
Yeah.
That's quite the jump.
But it's all widgets, right? That's what I tell people. It's relationships, as I said in the beginning. It's just talking to people, meeting them where they're at, and trying to serve. The more people you serve, the better you'll do.
Yeah. There's so many ways to make money.
Yes.
Often people have some sort of hobby or something. Oh, I got to work in that space. Like, you can have that same kind of job doing all kinds of different things. Just open your eyes to that a little bit. So wonderful. Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.